All right, Proverbs chapter 31, continuing in our series. This is the second sermon in that series on virtue. Today we will be considering the virtue of loyalty primarily, and we will be looking specifically at verses 11 and 12. And so I'm going to read that starting at verse 10. I'm going to read the whole section. This is the words of King Lemuel's mother teaching him how to find a good wife. So if you are looking for a good wife, if you're in that stage of your life, this is very relevant for you. But beyond that, this passage teaches us how to live virtuously. And there's a lot of principles here about virtue that we can all gather. And so we're going to begin in verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. And here's our particular passage for this morning. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does good, she does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing. And she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. And to summarize, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Amen. When Emily and I moved to Opelousas many years ago, and I can't remember the precise date, 2004, 2005, I'm not sure. We moved into an older neighborhood on Court Street, downtown Opelousas. And we moved there because we had moved back to Louisiana with the intention of planting a church. Our church in Virginia, which we had moved to for a season, commissioned us to plant a church in Acadiana, which is where I and my wife are from and which we had a heart for. And so we moved to Opelousas, which was near my family, and it seemed as good a place as any to plant a church. Of course, as you know, that's not how it all worked out. We planted the church in Lafayette, and then we planted a church in Opelousas. So, but that's for a story for another day. When we moved to Opelousas, we moved into an old dilapidated house in an old dilapidated neighborhood. It was so bad. You know, how bad was it? You know, it was so bad that I can remember we had a comforter nailed up to the doorways to try to conserve what little we were getting from the window unit for air conditioning. And many of you have lived that life. And the crime was bad. The sirens blared all night long. Any little squeak or noise in the house had me walking around in my sleeping attire with my handgun just about every other night. It was a rough neighborhood. But what really stood out to me was that the homes were rough. They were dilapidated. It's like many of the people who were responsible for building those homes, beautiful, majestic homes in their day, around the 40s probably, beautiful homes, detailed architecture, style, not like the McMansions that they're throwing up today, honestly, in my opinion. They were beautiful. There was variety. There was taste. Beautiful, but dilapidated and completely torn down. You know, in some languages that don't have a Christian heritage, they don't have a word for maintenance. It's true. They don't have a word for maintenance. It's interesting about languages. We know what maintenance is, but maintenance is a Christian worldview concept. It implies linear history and the ability to establish a heritage which you lead for the next generation to build upon. You see, you know, you don't maintain grass huts. That's not a concept in their worldview. And that's how I could describe this neighborhood, is they had lost the Christian concept of heritage, of passing down a heritage to the next generation, of maintaining. Now, there's a lot of factors there. There was economic distress, and many of the people from Opelousas moved to Lafayette. But the neighborhood was in disrepair, filled with slumlords and tenants who didn't care much about the beauty or the peace of the neighborhood. And that's just the fact of the matter. But there was one exception to that rule, and that was my next-door neighbor. They had a charming little house, a beautiful little house. Nothing fancy, but well-kept and well-manicured. Nice manicured lawn, painted. The boards weren't tattered and shattered. They were maintained. It was a beautiful little house. It was the one house, a diamond in the rough. And this particular couple, they were older. They were older. Not quite elderly, but they were older. And they had grown up in Opelousas. And they had lived to see the glory days and the days of dilapidation. But still they were there in Opelousas. What we call that this day, it's a long lost virtue of loyalty. That's what you call that. Like, I was born in this place. This is my place. These are my people. And I planted my flag of allegiance and loyalty and service to these people for better or worse, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. I'm not going to just float around from neighborhood to neighborhood like a hummingbird with a sucker on my face looking for what sugar water I can consume until it dries out and I hit another one. I'm loyal to these people. These are my people. That is a long-lost virtue. That is a long-lost virtue. But it is an incredibly biblical virtue. Hesed in the Old Testament is the word for covenantal loyalty. When we sing the song, the famous hymn, "Great is thy faithfulness," that's the word loyalty. He's loyal to his people, even when his people are not loyal to him. Even when his people are dilapidated. Loyalty. What is loyalty? Well, I already said it's a long-lost virtue in the American church. It is shockingly lost in the American church. And as a result, the American church is dilapidated. It does not pass down heritages to the next generation. It's a run-down neighborhood, if you will. Loyalty is finding your place in this world and your people, and taking responsibility to lay down your life as a sacrifice to serve their needs, for better or worse, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. Loyalty is covenant keeping, even under stress. If you're loyal in the good times and not in the bad times, you ain't loyal, right? You may have said you were loyal, but you're not loyal. Loyalty is saying I do, swearing those wedding vows, and then doing for the rest of your life, regardless of the circumstances. That's loyalty. Loyalty is joining a church and vowing to serve the needs of that church, and doing so even when it seems to you that the costs are outweighing the benefits. Loyalty is taking responsibility. Kids, listen to this. Loyalty is taking responsibility for doing the chores around the house, not because dad will get mad if you don't do it, and not because you're getting paid, but because it's your house, and you are an heir of that house, and will receive it as an inheritance. How many kids want to get an allowance, want to get paid for working around their house? Say to your kids next time, you want to get paid like an employee? Is that what you want to be? My son, my very own son, wants to be an employee. Well, you're worth $7 an hour, tops. You get $7 an hour. I'll leave the inheritance to your brother since you don't want it. No, why do you want to be treated like an employee when you're an heir? It's your house. Put a stake in the ground. Be responsible. Take some ownership. Be loyal. Be loyal. That's loyalty. Loyalty is driven not by one's rights, but by one's duties. Loyalty is when you see a piece of trash on the sidewalk, you pick it up. You do not say, that's not my job. I don't get paid for that. You pick it up because that sign on the side of the road that says, let's keep our community clean, includes you too. You're not an exception to the rule. The words, our community, you're in that. And you're supposed to be loyal. That's why you pick up the trash. You say, well, I did pick up the trash. But there's a lot of trash. Well, you got a big job, sorry, you know? You think Jesus, what if Jesus would have said that to God when God sent him to this world to save his people? God, you know, we got a whole lot of trash down here. You say, well, I did pick up the trash, but then the next day there was another piece of trash. Well, you got yourself a systemic problem, okay? Find the source of that systemic problem and deal with it. Or you can just stand around and complain and threaten, I'm going to find a better neighborhood with better amenities and better trash services where everything's going to be perfect for me. You're going to bounce around from neighborhood to neighborhood like a hummingbird. That's not how God made you. If you're always doing what you think is best for you in the moment, you will not receive what is best for you because you're not living in covenant loyalty. God gave you hands with opposable thumbs so that you could take up and create and build and fight and do and make. You're not a hummingbird with little flapping wings and a sucker to jump around, just consuming what's left over of this dilapidated Western civilization. It's time to put your flag in the ground and say, these are my people, this is my place, this is the time to which God has sent me for such a time as this, and I'm going to lay down my life sacrificially because I know that's the path to victory and to exaltation. Loyalty is Joseph, who though he had been kidnapped and did not deserve to be a slave, he had committed no crime and he owed no one any money. He was enslaved against his will, and yet as a slave in Potiphar's house, he served Potiphar. He was loyal. Loyal to the people and to the place that God had put him in his particular time. Loyalty defers gratification, knowing that in the next life, you'll get it back 100-fold. Amen? Loyalty is David, who stayed faithful to Saul, even when Saul was trying to kill him. Loyalty is Jesus, who laid down his life because it was the Father's will, because he was loyal to the Father's household. And in laying down his life as a servant, he received it back again as king. Loyalty is the path to exaltation. Loyalty and service and commitment to the needs of those around you. Loyalty is what we see here in the Proverbs 31 woman. Let's look at it. Verse 11 one more time. The heart of her husband trusts in her. She's loyal. And you know, guys, I'm going to just tell you this right now. Solomon says to us that a loyal woman is more precious than, far more precious, let me get it right, than rubies. And more rare. Loyalty is a rare commodity these days. If you find that ruby, you better treasure it. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. Let's look at this phrase, the heart of her husband trusts in her. Once an older couple came to me and they wanted to get married. They had both had previous marriages, both had kids, and I'm adapting the story a little bit to make the point, but both had kids, both had a lot of money. The kids were fairly grown at this point in time. And you know with Louisiana law, it can be a little sketchy about inheritance and whatnot. It's hard to figure out some of those things. And so they came to me and they said, we both have money. We both have kids. We want to make sure our kids receive their proper inheritance. And we've both been divorced before, so we know how things happen. But we trust each other. But should we get some sort of prenuptial agreement to lay down some legal groundwork to protect people? And I said, yeah, I think that's fine. That's good. And there's biblical precedent in scripture, not necessarily of prenuptials per se, but there's biblical precedent for laying down some legal guardrails to protect people in case of unfaithfulness, because unfaithfulness does happen. Okay? And they said, but here's the concern, Pastor Brandon. But we trust each other. Doesn't it look like we don't trust each other? And I said, you do trust each other, but you don't trust each other. And I said, how can that be? No, you trust each other, but you don't trust each other. Because you understand, trust grows over time. You don't make best friends overnight, right? You don't have a wife or a husband that you truly trust in with your heart overnight. They said I do. Okay, we'll see. We want to give the benefit of the doubt, but trust is displayed over a period of time as it withstands the tests and the trials and the stresses of life. So this husband, he trusts her in his heart, but that's because she's been loyal in the ups and the downs, in the sickness and in the health, in the good and the bad, in the richer and the poorer. Amen? Her words of loyalty have been backed up by actions of loyalty for a season of testing, and he has grown to trust her and trust her and trust her and trust her more and more and more and more, and trust can always grow. She does not get the 7-year itch. She's loyal to her mom and dad. She's loyal to her clients. She's loyal to the poor in her town. She's loyal to her family. And primarily and ultimately, she is loyal to her husband and to God. And she has displayed that over a season of time. She isn't dreaming of better. She isn't wallowing in discontent, wondering what if. The trials come, the trials go, and she's a rock. And he trusts her. I like that. You know, how is loyalty displayed? It's displayed during seasons of stress and trial. When you commit to a particular task, you commit verbally, you sign your name on the dotted line, you hand over a contract to another person, you are bonded to that person, and the loyalty will be tested when the contract is hard to keep. Because it's going to cost you something. But what does the Bible say to do? Keep your word. Keep your bond. Be loyal, even at a cost to yourself. That's just a lost art these days. How many people have lived through people just blowing off contracts with no concern? It's actually caused a lot of havoc in my life personally. It's hard to do business with people. Loyalty to a church or to a school or to an organization or to a neighborhood or to a town or to a people. Loyalty is going to be tested in times of stress and trial. And when the sugar water dries up and you flutter off like a migratory bird, it's because you don't have any loyalty, right? How many get married and then they get divorced over money problems? They say money problems is the number one cause of divorce. Well, that doesn't make any sense to me. You said I do, and rich or poor. Money problems shouldn't cause anyone to get divorced, but it causes them to get divorced. Why, Christchurch class? They're not loyal, at least not loyal that much. But this woman here, she stood the test of the time, and he trusted her with his heart. And husbands, wives, everyone, to have a wife like that, to have a husband like that over the long haul, sticking with you, to have a friend like that over the long haul, sticking with you, is more precious than rubies and more rare. Now, of course, if you want to have friends, you got to be friendly, right? You want to have loyal people around you, you got to be loyal. Nobody wants to commit to a consumer. And people can tell that you're there just to, you know, suck them dry of whatever they can get out of you. People know when you're treating them like the barber. You know, don't mess up my fade or I'm going to get another one. People know when you're, not that I have ever experienced that, but, you know, people know when they're using you. There's some signs of getting used all the time, and maybe we'll have time to get into them. But notice this other thing right here. It's the heart of her husband that trusts in her. Why does he point that out? Why doesn't it say the heart of her sister trusts in her? I'm sure her sister does trust her too, but why does it point out her husband? Why doesn't it say the heart of her client that she sells merchandise to trusts her? I'm sure her client does trust her. She seems like a loyal person, right? But why does it say her husband in particular trusts in her? Why does it say that right up at the very top? It introduces us to the excellent woman who's more precious and rare than rubies. And then it says, first thing, right out of the gate, her husband trusts in her. Why does it say that? Because here, loyalty is primarily displayed in how you are devoted to the members of your covenant communities and to the hierarchies within those communities that God has placed you in. Okay, I can see that didn't make any sense. If you're a child and you say you're obedient, but you don't obey your parents, you're not obedient, right? Well, I obey my boss at work. Sure, he signs your checks. He's bigger than you. But you don't obey your parents, and that means you're not obedient. Loyalty is primarily displayed in its relationship to those over you that God has placed over you and within your covenant community. If you say you're loyal and you're not loyal to the people in your church, you're not loyal. If you say you're loyal and you're not loyal to your own pastors, you're not loyal. If you say you're loyal and you're not loyal to the guy in the foxhole next to you, you're not loyal. Well, I'm loyal. I'm loyal to these people and those people and these people and these vague sense of general people all over the world, but I'm not loyal to my guy in the foxhole. You're not loyal. If she says she was loyal but not loyal to her husband, she is not loyal because her husband is the number one person that matters when it comes to her loyalty because he's her husband, the head of the household with which she is in and in covenant with. She is primarily oriented toward her household and to the head of that household, which is her husband. Make sense? Does that make sense? Loyalty, first, we already said, loyalty is displayed primarily during times of stress and trial. If you fold like a lawn chair during stress and trial, not loyal. Loyalty is also showed in how you relate to those within your covenant communities, your family, your church, and your town or your state, and to especially to those people in your family, church, and town that are over you. If you're loyal, generally speaking, vaguely, but not loyal to your own town, you're not very loyal, right? You think, well, I think there's better towns. You know, Colorado has great weather this time of year. I'll just flitter on over to Colorado for a season. That's not how we're called to live. It's not how we're called to live. Imagine if Jesus would have done that. Loyalty. And what is the result? Oh, we're almost done here. That's okay. You got a long sermon last week, so you're getting a short one this week. Let me just make sure I didn't miss anything good here. Yeah. How cool would it be? Okay, just think about this. Let me just go off the script for a second. God established three primary covenantal institutions, family, church, and the civil sphere, the town. Let's just say the town. It's hard to relate to people in other parts of the world, but you do have a relationship with them, but primarily the family, the church, and the town. How cool would it be to be in a family where there's been stresses and there's been trials, but everyone sticks by each other? Now, we're not saying they are turning a blind eye to injustices. They are ultimately loyal to God, right? You know, so we're not like enabling drug addiction simply because they have the same last name as us. That's not loyalty. That's an abuse of the virtue of loyalty. You're ultimately loyal to God. But other than that, you're loyal to your family. You don't run your parents down. You don't run your brothers and sisters down. You're true to them. Who would like to be in a family like that? Wow, peace and pleasantness and loyalty. Wouldn't you imagine you could take better risks? Your family could extend its dominion or its victory, its success, its fruitfulness much further because you got people to support you. You could walk out on that plank on the pirate ship, you know, walk out real far because you got a bunch of other people standing on the back end. Now, how would you like to be in a family like that? I'd love that. Imagine being in a church like that where you knew that what so-and-so said about so-and-so saying about you can't be true because they're loyal. You just know it. Get behind me, Satan. You have a confidence. My buddy in my foxhole fights for me and dies for me and is willing to sacrifice for me. That's loyalty. Wow, wouldn't it be nice to be in a church like that? Think about the American church, though. It's like shuffling Lego pieces on the board, like constantly. Let's say we got 100 churches with 1,000 people in all the churches. You just shift them. It's like the NBA trade every season. We're just switching them all around all the time. It's consumerism, guys. It's weakness. It's irrelevance. The world laughs at us. And it's largely because there's no loyalty. Imagine an army platoon with no loyalty. They would lose for sure. How would you like to be in a church like that? Loyal church, loyal family. And what about a town? How cool would that be? But our towns are so divided, divided by class, divided by ethnicity, divided, divided, divided. And there's a lot of explanations and reasons for that. But wow, what if the bad guys came in on parachutes and we all could look at each other, Red Dawn, you know, we're going to do this. Like, we're committed to each other. And I'm sorry for those of you who don't know what that means, but they're just like, we're sticking to each other and we're a town. You're a different ethnicity than me. That doesn't matter. I'm mostly connected to you with the bonds of loyalty, not skin color or what food we eat or whatever, but the bonds of loyalty. Because I said, you're my neighbor. And they're picking up trash and they're serving one another and meeting needs. Wow, wouldn't it be something to live in a place like that? It would be like living in a Christian world. That's what it would be like. I love that. All right, well, let's get to the result. Back to the virtuous woman. Verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. Now you see, this is what a lot of people in the world don't realize. They think that the path to being blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. And the path to being praised is not to humbly serve your community and your covenantal people and your husband. They think the path to being praised is to exalt oneself and to get yours and to put yourself up on a pedestal. She receives praise through the path of humble service to her kids and her husband primarily. And as we will read, to the people in her town as well, the poor, etc. The path to praises and exaltation is suffering, consistent sacrifice for the needs of the people and the place and the time around you. Just like Jesus, who became a man and suffered and died for the people that the Lord sent him for. And then, having been found loyal and faithful, he was exalted to prime minister of the universe. See that right there? Loyalty. I love it. That's it. That's good for today. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.